Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hallo und welcome to Gegenpressing. I'm Manu Fate, he's Stefan Biankowski, and also joining us today is Matt Ford. First of all, to you too, Happy New Year, Guten Rutsch, as they say in German. Stefan, how was Happy New Year? I know in Scotland you guys do it over two days, because why not? So how are you doing?
Yeah, happy Hogmanay, as we say in Scotland. Doing very well, mate. Yeah, had lots of fun with my family on Hogmanay. We actually did a murder mystery with my parents and some friends, so that was quite good fun.
On Sky?
No, this was in Glasgow. We were in Skye for my wife's parents on Christmas, so we kind of did all the rounds. Lots of driving in the snow and the rain, and I'm actually looking forward to just settling down doing nothing in January.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very well, mate. I'm glad to be back. I've been itching to get back into the swing of things, so I'm glad we're doing this.
Totally. And Matt, was Neues?
Happy New Year.
How was it for you?
Seemed a bit quieter than Stefan's. I was literally tucked up on the couch watching TV by 11 o'clock on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
And I felt all the better for it. I think that's the best way to do New Year. So,
yeah
had a nice relaxed one.
Great. It wasn't the easiest Christmas New Year for me and my family, but we're getting through it. Had a really nice time over the New Year's weekend in Seattle with some friends. Just getting away from everything, and that was fantastic. So yeah, I'm just so stoked to be back on the show. Getting to Bundesliga football is going to be back this weekend, and we have so much to discuss on the show. So let's do our break and then just jump right into it. This episode of the Gegenpressing podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. With NFL playoffs right around the corner and the NBA season in full swing, BetOnline has you covered with all the up to second odds, news, and scores. With additional odds, lines, trends, and info on both desktop and mobile, you can access the world's best wagering information anytime. Head there today to get into the action and see all the updated odds. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, BELIEVE, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Yeah, guys, so some really sad news to start the podcast with, and we're not going to dwell on this too much because, Stefan, I think you and I have planned a special bonus show on this for later this week. Franz Beckenbauer passed away on Sunday. The family released the information today, literally the hour before we went online. So yeah, condolences to the family. Just real quick, Stefan and Matt. Stefan, such a huge figure in German football. And seeing him gone, I think for a lot of people, that's a lot of memories that are probably coming up today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he obviously had a much wider profile in Germany itself, but internationally,
yeah.
You know, I don't think it's too far to say almost one of the kind of founding fathers of modern German football, which, you know, is, you know, it's something, things like the word legend are obviously thrown around a lot modern, but when it comes to German football, which, you know, as most German football fans will know, was a little later in its development than, you know, football in England and Italy and stuff, and because of obviously things that happened in the 20th century. But him and that kind of generation of Bayern Munich players and what they did with Germany as well, or West Germany, I guess. Yeah, it is his legacy and his influence and his influence as well. Just hard to kind of measure, really, and few really compare, to be honest. So a very, very sad day for German football.
Absolutely. Matt, any thoughts from you?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably people a lot better placed with much longer memories than me who could speak in much, much more depth about Franz Beckenbauer. But yeah, a colossal giant of the game, and characterised entire era, several eras. I was just thinking before, obviously it's not quite the same year anymore, but only a few months after we lost Sir Bobby Charlton as well. Yeah, very much a contemporary of Franz Beckenbauer's, and I believe the two were actually quite good friends in later years. So yeah, to lose two giants of European football in such a short space of time, it really does signify the end of an era, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up with the legend of the Watschen from Giesing, and we'll cover that little piece of legendary Franz Beckenbauer tidbit in greater detail. Of course, for me, you know, he's been growing up in Germany and German football, larger than life, won the World Cup as a player in 1974, won the World Cup as a head coach, and this is the first World Cup I do remember the final of. Don't remember much else of the tournament. I was still quite young, but the final I do remember, and Bremer, of course, scoring the penalty and Beckenbauer leading the country to the World Cup as the first player coach to win the World Cup. So, you know, it's a sad day for German football. And we'll cover it in depth. So keep your eyes open for that. On ears, of course, as well. But guys, we have a ton to get into. I guess start with Hans-Joachim Watzke, Stefan. The news today that he is going to step down from his duties at Borussia Dortmund in 2025. You know, basically ad hoc statement, which they have to do because they are a stock exchange company in Germany. They had to announce this. The statement basically said that, you know, he's not going to renew his contract. He's saying that he's done. An end of an era for Borussia Dortmund, but I would argue it's about time.
It's you're right. It was quite surprising. And possibly a surprise for a lot of people at Dortmund too. I was speaking to someone this afternoon about who the kind of person is that's lined up to replace him, because that's obviously something that hasn't been confirmed or even speculation seems to be few and far between at the moment. And, you know, speaking to someone who kind of knows the inner workings of the club, and they were telling me that the reason perhaps that he's given himself such a long, shall we say, kind of swan song, is because none of that has even been discussed yet. Nothing's planned, nothing's in line. There is no successor in place as of yet. So, you know, in a sense, it was kind of out of the blue. And it also is fascinating when you kind of contextualize it within what's going on at Dortmund right now, the upheaval at the club, the real kind of you know, just sheer amount of of reaction they've had to do to what this that first half of the season, you know, whether it be the head coaches that have come in and Nuri Sahin and Bender as well, whether it's the players they're trying to sign, who we'll obviously go on to talk about later on the show. And now the board itself seems to be getting a rejig. So it seems like from top to bottom, there's a lot going on at Dortmund. And yeah, Vatska's going to leave a very interesting legacy. The thing that keeps coming to mind, and this obviously shows my age, I guess, in the sense that, and the kind of internet culture that I grew up in, but it reminds me of that line from the Dark Knight, you know, you either die a hero or live long enough to become the villain. And I think there's a degree of that with Vatska, in the sense that, you know, what he did for Dortmund in terms of getting him through very difficult kind of financial struggles in more times, and you know, in two senses, in the sense, obviously the first time, but obviously during COVID as well, which is what kind of led to him extending his role. Because I think there was the general consensus that he was planning on kind of packing it in before that, but stuck around to steady the ship through those kind of very troubled waters. But he now kind of steps down with a lot of frustration, I think, from fans. I mean, I think, you know, once he does move on, the kind of that frustration will kind of melt away, and, you know, people will look back with rose-tinted glasses at the successes the club had when he was in charge, and they were a lot of successes. But I think it's probably fair to say that maybe he kind of extended that beyond when he should have. But anyway, I'll shut up and let somebody else talk.
Yeah, I think you're quite right. I think you point out something very important here, that when I said it's about time, I don't mean because he hasn't done in generally a good job, because I think he really did. I mean, he steered Dortmund through diverse crises, saved the club from financial ruin, right? And then turned him into a club that, for a time at least, really challenged Bayern Munich. I think what happened after is where a lot of discontent has come, where they just never really seemed to fulfill their potential completely. And this notion of not maybe bringing in the sort of change needed to compete in modern football, this idea of always, you know, being a seller's club, I think there needs to be a development step that comes beyond that. And Matt, I'm really surprised Carsten Kramer's name isn't mentioned as an automatic successor. We've seen it by Munich how difficult a successorship can be, and obviously Uli Hoeneß is more or less back. But this is going to be quite a difficult transition, right?
Yeah, but as Stefan said, that's why they've given themselves a good 18 months, or so, best part of 18 months now to sort all this out. The announcement, in the great scheme of things, didn't come as big a surprise to me as it perhaps, I don't know, maybe did to Stefan, or the way, at least the way you were talking about it, because as you mentioned, this was mooted a few years ago, just before the just before COVID hit, and the reason for him staying was to help steer the good ship Borussia Dortmund through the pandemic, and Dortmund were hit extremely hard by the pandemic, harder than most, simply by virtue of having the biggest stadium and losing the most gate seats. Although there were other reasons as well. You'll leave I think on balance, a positive legacy. The COVID crisis was the third big challenge that he steered Dortmund through. We've already mentioned the financial crisis, which posed a genuinely existential threat to the club back in 2003-4-5. That was when Vatska joined the board. He'd already been in the club for a few years as treasurer, I think, but he joined the board in 2005. Played a decisive role and a key role in helping to stabilise the club, set it up in a financially stronger position. Helped, and not sure if it was helped by that, but he was certainly one of the leading figures who oversaw Borussia Dortmund's development as a club listed on the stock exchange. So he has been a key figure. The second challenge, which we haven't mentioned yet, was, I think, often gets forgotten in a lot of discussions around Dortmund in recent years, is the bomb attack in 2017. Vatska played important, key role in that. I think depending on who you ask, for good or for bad, I don't think he was completely without blame in the aftermath. I think if you asked Thomas Tuchel and some of the players, they would probably still have criticisms of his of elements of his actions around that. But given the magnitude of the situation, I think on balance, I think Valskjaer did do a generally good job of steering the club through yet another difficult time. And even though I think it's right to point out that there are clearly frustrations these days, and if there does seem to be a lack of strategy on the pitch, off the pitch, transfer policy, youth policy, what Borussia Dortmund should stand for, if there are those doubts now, then I think Valskjaer does have that to answer. It probably is why it's come to an end. I don't think there's any harm in things coming to an end. But that's up there. There are questions for the future, but that probably shouldn't cloud over the fact that the philosophy that is came to be criticised a little bit by the end is in Dortmund too much of a selling club. I think it's also forgotten sometimes that, you know, in cooperation with Michael Zorc and others at Dortmund, that, you know, Vatska was a key element in developing that sort of club football / business strategy in the first place. Scouting well, scouting cheap, buying cheap, with the absolute intention of selling on, because that was the method that they identified with which they could challenge Bayern Munich, and they had differing amounts of success in that. I think just because that philosophy, that strategy, wore itself out in the end, I don't necessarily think that means it was a complete failure on Hans-Joachim Watzke's part. But it probably does mean that it makes sense for all parties to move on. And as we said, Borussia Dortmund are a fork in the road. And it's the end of an era there. And they've got the best part of 18 months to work out where to go from here.
I think just to jump in there, Manu, very briefly before we maybe move on, just to kind of hammer home that point that Matt was saying there, that, you know, if you do, you know, because it is, you know, you go in the forums and stuff, and it is, you see a lot of kind of Dortmund fans frustrated with Vasca and the way the club's behaved, and God knows we've done it as well on this show, and we've talked about Vasca maybe having to move on a number of times, but you know, you have to take that with you have to balance that out with what he accomplished at the club. And you know, just thinking about it, I think you could make a strong argument he's arguably one of the most important people that Dortmund have ever had as a single individual, because how important he was to, you know, we're talking about a club here that went from the verge of bankruptcy to, you know, back-to-back Bundesliga titles in the space of 10 years. And, you know, of course, Dortmund would have probably stumbled on somehow without him, you know, but we would have been talking about another Kaiserslautern or something. You know, I genuinely believe that, in the sense that they would have been relegated and it would have been turmoil. And, you know, German football is, you know, it's a graveyard of former giants that have struggled financially and fallen on hard times and really struggled to get back on their feet. Perhaps Schalke are unfortunately a good example of that, although there's probably far more severe examples of that possibly. I think that is really worth pointing out, you know, in terms of that period of Dortmund's history, and, you know, as Matt said, the kind of the way that they managed to gamify modern football and the economics of modern football to kind of give themselves a leg up. And as Matt said, you know, maybe Michael Zorc was perhaps the real architect behind that part of it, but that's something that will be the top line of his obituary when it comes to Dortmund. You know, it's not going to really be the politics in his latter years, maybe the malaise, which you could argue is maybe just a natural reaction to the fact that they were so good at gaming a certain period of European football that naturally what came next is something that, you know, lightning doesn't strike twice, shall we say. You know, it's that kind of aspect that, and that's why people like ourselves who watch Dortmund week to week, year in, year in, and Dortmund fans themselves would say have grown frustrated in recent years, because they knew how well it worked in the past and why it's not working now. And maybe Dortmund took too long to realise that themselves. And, you know, as Matt said, maybe obviously the COVID pandemic elongated Vatska's maybe his how he felt a necessity to keep to stay there and keep things ticking along. But you know, it's almost like what that kind of financial prudence and that kind of care that he and Zorc and others put towards finances of the club were his greatest strength and his greatest weakness, in the sense that it was obviously crucial to them getting beyond that bankruptcy situation. But in latter years of his reign, you could see and you could argue that Dortmund were a club that were run by numbers rather than real sporting merit or sporting demands. And I think that's probably why there's a complicated aspect of Vasquez's legacy. But I think in time, the stuff that happened earlier will far outweigh these kind of last kind of 5 or 6 years of frustration.
I mean, when you look at it, the bottom line is 2 Bundesliga titles, I think 2 German Cups as well.
Three,
yeah, you're right. One under Klopp, one under Terzic, and one under Tuchel. The Champions League final, of course. I think except for 1 year, after the Klopp era, every year in the Champions League, I think there's only 1 year they missed out. You know, these are, it's astonishing considering where the club was when they were almost bankrupt in the early 2000s. It just seems like the next development step is now needed. And I think this is where we get to this. And Matt, you rightfully pointed this out as a fork in the road, right? It's going to be fascinating to see what comes next. And, you know, the news are still fresh. I've spoken a couple of times to Carsten Kramer, who is, you know, sort of the right-hand man for Hans-Joachim Watzke, and I think is quite progressive. It's going to be interesting to see whether he goes to step up. Or, and I think this is maybe something to consider, if they're going to go club external, if they're going to bring in someone who's not currently at the club. These things can be difficult. And, you know, I can only point at Bayern Munich, where they also and initially hoped that they would have lots of time for the transition, right? Karl-Heinz Rummenigge stayed on for a year to work with Oliver Kahn, yet that didn't work out. They're essentially back to where they were before with a completely new board that still adds people. That's what I mean. Like, even with that 8-month period, a transition like that can be difficult. And I'm just so very curious to see where they're going to go with it. I know we're entering a little bit of speculative territory, guys, but would it be maybe better for them to go external? Matt, what do you think?
I think either way, it's going to have to be, whether internal or external, it's going to have to be somebody who can come to terms and get to grips with what is going to be in the next few years. And perhaps sooner than we think, a completely new football world. I also don't think it's a surprise that Vasco stepped down so soon after his interim period in charge of the German Football League, DFL. If we go back to some of the chats we had last year about the initial attempt to secure a private equity investor deal, that was under the leadership, the interim co-leadership of Vasco and Axel Hellmann. And I think Vasco very much saw that as his baby as well. And I think he was, he was visibly shocked and pretty distraught, it seemed, by the when that initial vote went against him back in May. Obviously, he still retains a place on the supervisory board at the DFL, but it's going to be a new football going forward. The UEFA Champions League reform is already in the starting gates and ready to go. We've already had our final group stage, haven't we? So that's also history, and we have an expanded FIFA Club World Cup around the corner. So all of these issues, you've got challenges of state ownership, multi-club ownership, all these issues are going to characterise global football in the coming years, which is probably another reason why it's probably a good thing for someone like Vasco to end his era and hand it over to somebody who, for good or for bad, can navigate these waters. And I think whoever does take over Dortmund in those waters, I think he'll or she will take over a club which is well set up to do so. For years in Dortmund, they've been talking about finding this famous balance between Beijing and Borsigplatz. So Borsigplatz being the square in just north of Dortmund city centre where the club were founded, where they, you know, go around the roundabout celebrating titles, even if, you know, if Dortmund fans could remember long enough back to remember celebrating Bundesliga titles. But yeah, and so yeah, that's the old traditional Borussia Dortmund and Beijing, I suppose, used as a symbol of general global support and global interest in the club. So Dortmund are no stranger to that. They're not the worst placed club in the world to deal with this new world. But they're going to be the key challenges for whoever follows Watzke.
It's a top 10 European club. I mean, you have to say that, right? At least top 10, top 20. Stefan, lots of people would like that job, I would assume.
Yeah, they would. You know, as Matt said, there's a kind of new stage of European football coming along. They may be a top 10 European club, but unfortunately the future European football may suggest that means they're actually the 30th or 40th richest club in Europe after 20 or 30 English teams, as the way things seem to be going. And that's always kind of been Dortmund's struggle in the modern era, is much like Bayern or Leverkusen or, you know, Real Madrid or Inter Milan, you know, PSG, maybe not PSG, but, you know, Marseille, all these clubs are kind of dealing with the kind of changing current of European football and the money that English football kind of sucks in. So, and hey, look, Dortmund more than anyone else have benefited from that over the last kind of 5 or 10 years, and the way that they've sold players and the way that they've made money from players. And, you know, we're about to talk about one who they made an absolute fortune off and are now getting back for free more or less than 2 years later or 3 years later. So, you know, that's a perfect example of how Dortmund have managed to kind of navigate that previous era. But they do need someone who can think a little outside the box and going forwards, and someone who, you know, I mean, I keep coming back to this, but isn't just going to be beholden to the spreadsheets at the end of the financial year every year and pat themselves on the back if those look better than the league table come May. That, I think Dortmund fans are perhaps a little sick of the spreadsheet coming before the league table, if you will. Of course, there has to be financial prudence. Of course, the club's future has to be goes beyond doubt. But I think they do need someone who kind of thinks outside the box from a sporting point of view, because the club's kind of transfer policy over the last kind of couple of years has been more and more hoping to kind of hit a home run with these kind of young players that they kind of hoover up from France and England. And then just kind of filling in the rest of the squad with bog standard Bundesliga players and asking an average head coach to make it work. And, you know, and that's the sad thing when we talked about, you know, I remember when Erling Haaland left the club, I wrote a piece saying that he scored a bazillion goals for Dortmund. But if you actually look at the club's progress, either in the league or in Champions League, it didn't move the needle at all. And Jude Bellingham came very close to winning a Bundesliga title, but aside from that, it was the same sort of thing. So that's the kind of frustration I think people have with Dortmund from a sporting point of view, whereas maybe on a business level, they've ticked along just fine. And I think they need someone after Vasco who can kind of flip that and make them a success on a sporting level, whereas maybe in a financial level, they go back to being a very kind of normal bog standard club.
Yeah, I think sporting wise, Stefan makes a good point. It probably is the last few, like 4 or 5 years under Watzke. I think you can express genuine sporting criticisms of Dortmund, and like I said, it's because that initial philosophy, business plan that they had, did tend to peter out, and they wanted to take the next step. They identified, in my opinion, incorrectly, that next step was to supplement the young talents they had coming through with proven Bundesliga talent. Hence why they've ended up with the likes of Marcel Sabitzer, Niklas Füllkrug, Emre Can, Ben Zbaini, etc. All leading the line. And yeah, that was the decision they made. I think that was an incorrect one. I think it's probably showing this season. It's not the way to go. So yeah, you need someone to think outside the box. That's where I think, yeah, someone external probably then would be would be my choice. Some of the coaching choices in recent years have also been questionable. You would have thought on paper that Marco Rosa would have been a really good fit for Dortmund, but obviously didn't work out after a very short time. Thomas Tuchel, there were obviously extenuating, mitigating circumstances surrounding the bus attack, and Tuchel as a personality himself who clashed with Vatsko, obviously a powerful personality.
Where would Dortmund be if Tuchel had never clashed with Vatsko?
I mean, I think it's a massive, I think it's an if we've discussed before, but it's the clash with Vatsko is itself inextricably linked to the bus attack. So it's difficult to really take one without the other. Vatsko is such a dominant alpha male figure at Borussia Dortmund, we probably also always struggled with that sort of powerful coaching character. If you can criticise more, so yeah, let's say some of the coaching decisions and appointments. I think most recently, I think the Terzic. Yeah, we've discussed it loads of times, haven't we?
And we'll probably lots more.
We probably will lots more. Yeah. He's not proven yet that he has the pedigree to take Borussia Dortmund to the next level. And I mean, I'll happily be proven wrong, I suppose. But I fail to see how the decision to bring in Sven Bender and Nuri Sahin by Terzic's side will really help that. Might be proven wrong. And to an extent, same applies to Sebastian Kehl as sporting director. I think he's a good operator to deal with. He may have a bright future as a functionary and as an executive ahead of him. I think he is an intelligent operator. But his transfer operations and squad building haven't been up to scratch so far. There's no other way to put that.
Yeah, but okay, I'm going to defend Sebastian Kehl here, Matt, because I know that he wanted to do things a little different and he wasn't allowed to. And I think I've reported that as well, that there were certain deals that Sebastian Kehl wasn't allowed to do because Terzic and Watzke vetoed it, mostly Terzic. But, you know, guys, Stefan said players moving the needle for Borussia Dortmund. Now one of those players that didn't move the needle, although he did win the Pokal, I guess, with Erling Haaland, is Jadon Sancho. And I do want to move the discussion to that topic.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. With NFL playoffs right around the corner and the NBA season in full swing, BetOnline has you covered with all the up to second odds, news, and scores. With additional odds, lines, trends, and info on both desktop and mobile, you can access the world's best wagering information anytime. Head there today to get into the action and see all the updated odds. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, Believe, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. By the time of recording,
Man United and Borussia Dortmund still hashing out the finer details of the deal. The only thing that seems to hold us up, and I'm coming to you here first, Matt, because I personally think this is hilarious, but Manchester United wants to make the deal look good for them publicly. I think there's no way in the world that Manchester United are going to look good coming out of this deal publicly right now. I mean, they might at the end if Jadon Sancho does well, Dortmund does return to Man United and looks like the player he was, gosh, 2 years ago now, right? But there will be one day, I think, a book written about what went wrong for Jadon Sancho at Manchester United. But ultimately, it did go wrong. And I know you are a Man United supporter. This is your English club. You're close to the club. You understand the club. What do you think went wrong here?
Like you said, given that the reason why, as we speak, the deal is still being held up, given that that is down to Manchester United, looking to score some sort of communicative PR points out of the whole situation, I think that tells at least half of the story. Jadon Sancho, I think, to a great extent, has himself to blame. We'll come on to that. But I think there's a massive caveat involved here in that Jadon Sancho is not the only player who has struggled to make an impact at Manchester United in the last 10, 12 years. He joins a long list. He's returning to the Bundesliga at the same time as Donny van de Beek. You could arguably put him in that bracket as well. Sancho arrived at United one of several strange periods over the past 10 years under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and I think looking back, that's probably where one of the first problems arose. In that, as a young player who had benefited so well from being in that sort of Bundesliga ecosystem, I think the move probably came at the wrong time. Being at Dortmund at the time he was, I think particularly under Lucien Favre, even though he didn't have the greatest relationship with Favre, he was nevertheless at a club and in a league which is quite keen and focused on its tactical development. I think sometimes to its own detriment, in that you end up with a lot of clubs, a lot of teams playing effectively the same way. Nevertheless, a lot of Bundesliga clubs do place a greater focus on much better better planned attacking patterns, transitional play, trained automatisms on the training ground, and I think that benefited Jadon Sancho greatly. He was then taken out of that environment and placed in an environment in Manchester under a coach who, similarly lacked the pedigree. We talked about Edin Terzic earlier. I think there are probably certain similarities there to the environment that Sancho then found in Manchester was under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, where the football was very one-dimensional. It was purely based on counter-attacks, at least against the top teams. And there didn't seem to be much more of an offensive plan beyond that. So I don't think that was helpful for a young player like Jadon Sancho. What also didn't help him was him arriving at the same summer as the surprise return of Cristiano Ronaldo, particularly as Sancho had been earmarked largely for the right wing. That was then obviously taken by Ronaldo. And even though I always thought Sancho was at his most dangerous on the left-hand side for Dortmund, cutting in onto his right foot the way he used to do, at least at the time, that position at United was generally filled by Marcus Rashford, who similarly enjoyed cutting his head onto his right foot, albeit in a more direct and penetrative way than perhaps Jadon Sancho's dribbles. It all got off to a pretty unfortunate start on several levels. Add to that the consistent changes of coach. Ralf Rangnick actually spoke quite highly of Sancho during his short tenure in interim charge of United. Maybe that's not surprising, given that so many Bundesliga clubs, including Borussia Dortmund, whether they like it or not, have ended up playing a similar style of football to the one which Ralf Rangnick, arguably to a great extent, introduced to German football. So maybe it's no surprise that Ranić was a particularly fan of Jadon Sancho's, at least his potential talents. Nevertheless, like I said, despite all the caveats, Jadon Sancho has also not helped himself, has he? Which, I'm sure you two will have noticed that as well.
Yeah, I mean, Stefan, I think you'd probably have a lot of thoughts, but like, obviously, I think that it takes two to fight. I do think that given Manchester United's track record with a lot of other signings, there is this might be more on the club than the player, but you know, Sancho also didn't help himself with his social media antics. That is something I think that he needs to work on. I think too, there was also reports that he didn't show up for practice on time. I don't know how much there is to that story. I think the one thing that I always think, if it's one player who doesn't work out, that's fine. But if you on a consistent basis manage to sign players and they're getting worse at your club, then it's usually the club's fault. I mean, we have lots of examples like that in Germany, right? Hamburger SV, for example, were notorious for signing players that gotten worse there. And that usually comes down to the club and the philosophy of the club. So I think there is something generally wrong. The one thing that I have, and maybe let's move this conversation towards what this means for Borussia Dortmund. I learned a long time ago that you shouldn't go back. What's done is done. And I worry about players coming back, and Dortmund have done this many times, whether it's Gigi Kagawa, Nuri Sahin, just to mention two, right? That did come back, and it wasn't the same as it was before, simply because the clubs change and teams change, and the environment at the team within the team changes as well. And I also think that this on a short-term loan deal is something that I am not sure is there's enough time to fix Jadon Sancho from here to June. Obviously, if this deal includes some sort of, open door to negotiate a transfer, and it seems that's the case. There is no option to buy. At least that's what the latest is on this. Maybe this will also change, but at the moment it doesn't seem to be an option to buy. So Dortmund have no control over the asset, which is, I think, is always something that you don't want. Because if you only have this player for 6 months and then it's gone again, and this is, in my opinion, fixing Jadon Sancho is not a short-term project. It's a medium or even long-term project. You need to integrate the player. You need to get the player up and running quickly, because Borussia Dortmund are currently fifth in the Bundesliga, which I know, yes, right now that's a Champions League spot, but we don't know if that's still the case come the end of the season. We don't know how the Bundesliga will perform in Europe, so that's precarious at the least. And so I just think that bringing back a player without having control over him is a very, very risky thing to do. And even if Jadon Sancho hits the ground running and scores lots of goals and assists, then he's also gone again, because Man United will say, oh, okay, great, thanks, you fixed him, we're going to put him back in our squad, or we're just going to sell him for lots of money to another club. So, Stefan, these are the issues I have with this deal. I think that's probably some of your thoughts overlap with this.
Yeah, it's an interesting move. I completely agree with you in a sense that I'm a little baffled as to what Dortmund get out of this in the long run, if they can't agree some sort of deal for a long term move. And I mean, look, we have to bear in mind as well the fact that Sancho is on so much money at Manchester United that there's every chance that Man United would be happy to sell him. And I mean, as Matt would probably be able to tell us, there's been quite a lot of reports in England since, Ianis, I never pronounce the name properly. I don't know why. Ianis, is it Ianis or Ianias? Ineos, yeah, I don't know why. Just pronounce it like some Greek warrior or something. So a lot of reports that they are even willing to go to such an extent that they'd be willing to kind of, almost just write off players' contracts and just let them leave for good. If it meant they got, bad attitudes or players who aren't really willing to kind of all fight for the cause. You know, if they could get those players out of the dressing room, then they'd be willing to kind of take a short-term hit on that financially. So you can understand the situation where maybe Man United would be more than willing to discuss the prospect of selling Sancho, but Dortmund simply can't afford him, either in terms of a transfer fee or wages. So, I mean, we don't really know the finer details there as to whether it's Man United not being willing to sell him or Dortmund just accepting that they would never be able to afford him in the first place. Because I know, for example, they're also chasing Ian Mattson, the left back at Chelsea, and I think in that regard there is an obligation to buy, or at least an offer, a clause there, because obviously Chelsea are trying to move players on, and Dortmund probably see a young player that they can probably turn around. But that doesn't really help. I mean, that's the why as to why there might not be a kind of a sell-on fee, but it doesn't really explain the how. And in that regard, I mean, the fact that, as you said, maybe he does turn things around to Dortmund, which is still a big if, because, you know, we can talk about that in a minute, but I don't exactly think there's a red carpet rolled out for him to walk straight into Eden Terzic's first team. Maybe there is, but it's not really what I think is the case. And even if he can do that, and even if he can kind of get his form back on track, you know, there's every chance that Man United will have a new head coach next season. And this new head coach may have every intention of bringing Jadon Sancho back into the fold at Man United. So it's a short-term solution to a problem, and I'm not entirely sure it is a proper solution to it, to be perfectly honest with you, because it's a huge if to see if Sancho, after 2 years of you know, really plateauing at Man United and more or less not even training properly, not playing properly. We don't know what his fitness levels are like as he approaches his move to Dortmund. So it's a huge if as to whether he can even hit the ground running and begin to look like even half the player he was before he left for Manchester United. But all of that would have been willing to stomach if there was some sort of long-term plan for him to return to the club and be a long-term solution there. But
I think any of the doubts and the ifs that are being mentioned, I think they're only problems if there is any assumption that there is any long-term plan at all. And given that I don't think there is, I don't see it as a problem at all. I don't think anybody at Borussia Dortmund thinks they can fix Jadon Sancho. I don't even think that's the aim. I don't think anyone at Borussia Dortmund has any intention of signing Jadon Sancho long-term. They simply can't afford him. And Sancho...
So why bring him back at all?
Well, because he's got nowhere else to go. And secondly, he's effectively there on a free. They're paying, €3 million Euros as a loan fee in Manchester United to play, continuing to pay the lion's share of his wages. Dortmund are desperate for something, anything to enliven their attacking play, given that start of the season. Whether Jadon Sancho can do that or not, I don't know, remains to be seen. It probably is quite unlikely, given that he's not even trained with the first team, he's not even trained with the under-21s in recent months. But Borussia Dortmund aren't losing anything. He's not a long-term solution. We discussed before what the long-term is for Borussia Dortmund. That's still very much in the stars. They have bigger issues to sort out long-term than Jadon Sancho, and you know, that revolves around Rabatska, around Terzic, around Kale. I think it's a no-lose situation for Dortmund for 6 months. And as we mentioned, it's a potential win. I mean, I also think unlikely, but a potential win for United long term if he does find his way back to some sort of form and is able to return to Old Trafford, either in a situation where United can sell him onto a club who could afford him and take him on long term, or into a United team under a new coach, under a new sporting structure now that Ineos are in the building. I don't really share the skepticism, because I think that's all predicated on the idea that Dortmund would even want him long term, and I just don't think that's a factor.
It could become a factor if it becomes a story, And that's the last thing Dortmund need at the moment.
They simply can't afford him, though, Manu. That's the thing.
Even though they might
like the narrative, and they're dealing with a club who deals with narratives and like quite hopeless narratives better than most.
Now you exist in a sphere where you're fixing another club's problem.
Yeah, perhaps.
You do have nothing to gain from that. And on top of that, there is a risk that if Sancho does not hit the ground running and, you know, we show some of the same attitude that was criticized at Manchester,
really?
Then all of a sudden you have another story on top of all the stories that you're already carrying through the season.
That will be limited just to 6 months and then he'll be out the door again.
Yeah, but you can't be... The point is you don't have 6 months. You have 6 months to salvage a season because Champions League football is so crucial, right? They're not in the Champions League spot right now. I mean... Yes, on paper they are, but you know how fleeting that is. Do we have the guarantee that fifth is enough? Heck, can they even secure fifth the way things are going, right? And I think that there is a risk in that. This could cost you money.
Well, as we said, in terms of Champions League, it cost them money, but that wouldn't be anything to do with the Jadon Sancho deal. It's a massive if, Jadon Sancho suddenly miraculously returns to form and has a fantastic 3 or 4 months now with Dortmund and fires him into the Champions League, everyone's happy. If he doesn't, then he'll go back to Manchester either way. Dortmund can't lose from this, in my opinion.
Yeah. They can, and if you know, it doesn't work, and then, as Manu says, they end up finishing fifth or sixth, or I guess sixth in particular.
But that'll have nothing to do with the Sancho deal, will it? That'll be down to Borussia Dortmund.
Well, it could, if it does cause so more discontent.
It does if they feel an obligation to play him week in, week out, and nothing happens. And, you know, and this kind of takes me on to the thing that I'm kind of a little baffled by is that, you know, Matt mentioned a moment ago about why things didn't work out for him at Man United, and he touched on the fact that they already have a number of players in that position when he joined the club. Marcus Rashford's the most obvious one, but God, they had a whole backlog of players there when he joined. You know, Anthony Martial, Greenwood, Juan Mata, even Paul Pogba was playing on the left side, I think, as well at some points. And you know, you look at that Dortmund team, and there's an equal amount of players who'll be vying for that kind of left wing spot or right wing spot. Let's be honest, they can all play their wing either way, and you know, got Julian Brandt, who okay, has maybe played more central this season, but often gets shoved out wide if Terzic's trying to squeeze everyone in. Marco Royce has been playing a lot more this season as a number 10, of course, but can also play out wide. Daniel Malin, who's been hot and cold. Karim Adeyemi, who's been somewhat far from impressive, to be honest with you, but, you know, a big transfer, big earner at Dortmund, a player who kind of demands consideration week in, week out. And then, of course, the one player who's actually looked quite good so far this season, I've even mentioned Gio Reyna, by the way, but he's there as well, is Jamie Bynoe-Gittins, who almost exclusively plays in that left wing role. And, you know, if from now until the end of the season he's sitting on the bench because Dortmund have an obligation to play Jadon Sancho in that left wing, that's just going to cause further frustration. It's going to cause further turmoil between the fans and the club. And it just kind of further breeds this sense, this contempt for the sporting project of the club, because you just get a sense that nothing is working. And, you know, like I said, if there was a long-term plan here, and if Jadon Sancho arrives and the plan is for him to eventually return to the club, and there's some sort of bizarre agreement, then you can understand why Terzic and the board would prioritise Sancho on that left wing week in, week out. But if he's just a loan signing, then where is the actual incentive to actually even play him in the first place if you've got someone like Bynoe-Gittins or Daniel Malin or Adeyemi or Gio Reyna or Julian Brandt?
Assets that you own, right?
That's why I think Sancho's a nice bonus to have. Now, we're talking about big ifs and hypotheticals. If Edin Terzic feels an obligation to have to play Jadon Sancho. Now, I don't believe for a second that there is anything contractual that Sancho has to play. But if Terzic then just feels obligation to have to play him, then again, that's a different issue altogether. That's Edin Terzic's problem. I think if Manny's right, then Sancho can be a potential added bonus. Nothing more. And if at least if I were at Borussia Dortmund in this situation, that's exactly how I would see him. He's absolutely not a match fit. He's not played in ages. He's had two terrible years. If he can provide one or two goals, assists, the odd performance here and there, maybe even off the bench, which as part of a greater constellation contributes to Dortmund getting into the Champions League and he leaves again, then okay, great. If it turns out in training that he's clearly not up to speed and doesn't even make the matchday squad for two more months, then also so be it. It's not cost him anything, hardly. But yeah, obviously it's going to have to be well managed, but you'd have to presume that that Kjær, Terzic, Sahin and Bender have all discussed this and are prepared for that. Mm. If not, that's their issue.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing as well is that Terzic has had this kind of unique kind of issue with inside forwards in the squad this season, you know, in the sense that if there's one position that seems to continue to elude him, it does seem to be those kind of wide roles where he hasn't really managed to get a song out of Daniel Malin, out of Adeyemi. Obviously, Gio Reyna had his issues before Terzic arrived, but that hasn't changed. Bino Gittins is probably the only one I can think of that's actually seemed to thrive despite his injuries. So if you actually kind of want to flip it and say, what does Jadon Sancho get out of this move to Dortmund? There's a lot of risks there as well, because you know he'd probably be looking at a squad thinking, if he can't get Daniel Malin or Adeyemi to work this system, why would Jadon Sancho work in it? Obviously, you could argue he's a better player, but tactically and in terms of the formation, there's nothing about what Dortmund have done this season that says they know how to get the best out of inside forwards.
No, there's not. I agree with that. Although one thing that might stand to benefit Sancho is that Edin Terzic does like to do these direct substitutions, direct replacements, where he'll take off a winger, simply replacing with what are effectively fresh legs. That I can imagine would feasibly be a role that Jadon Sancho would play in the final 20 minutes of games, if his match fitness was considered up to it. Daniel Malin, at least in the second part of last season, would be an example of a player who arguably did find his best form eventually under Terzic, although there's rumours that even he could be off, which again might be another reason why having at least the option of Jadon Sancho in the squad is a good idea.
All right, well, I think we need to wrap this up, but here's my final analogy. I think Borussia Dortmund are a mechanic who should be fixing their own cars, but rather than fixing their own cars, they're taking someone else's car, fix that instead while their own cars are still rusting in the driveway, because that's what's going on here. I think of all the assets that they have that they need to get going first, Adeyemi, for example, Malin, etc., and instead they're bringing on someone else's project for free, sure, but also to no gain. Guys, this was great. So much fun to be back. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Bet Online, and of course, we're back to our normal schedule now, which means transfer show, bonus show. Stefan, you're writing something, I think, on Borussia Dortmund. I am not sure yet what I'm going to write on this week, but I will be writing on something this week, and so you can expect those on the Gegen Pressing Substack as well. Any final thoughts before we wrap this up, guys?
Nope, just again, Happy New Year to everyone, and let's hope 2024 is a good one for German football.
Yeah, obviously. Matt, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I echo that. Bundesliga's back next week. I hope I'll be in Darmstadt for Dortmund's first game. And then we go again, don't we?
We go again. Happy New Year, everyone, and enjoy the football. Until next time, auf Wiedersehen.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, You're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.